it's a whole bad bitch philosophy. It's a way of being, right? It's just being unapologetic, taking up space, commanding your worth, not backing down, calling out bullshit, just like doing your life on your own terms.
I'm Lisa Carmen Wang, and I'm the founder of The Bad Bitch Empire. What's up, bad bitches? Today we are here with Kristen Slania. She is the Chief Innovation Officer of Park My Fleet, which is creating transportation hubs for today and providing more sustainable propulsion for the future. She spent over 30 years in automotive as an engineer. She's on two public boards, and she recently co-wrote a chapter about meta mobility, which we will talk about more today, which is a combination of the metaverse and mobility. And so if those words aren't even very clear to you right now, we will dive all into it today. But Kristen, I want to actually read a little part of your biography to give people some context. I'm really excited to talk about Kristen because Kristen has recently joined as an investor, a limited partner in the Bad Bitch Empire Fund, and we only bring in the baddest bitches, women who have mission-oriented perspectives on the world and have really been these powerhouses in their own right. And that's why we've created this incredible network and this fund of women. So let me read you her biography. But it says, the day before her 22nd birthday, Kristen drove a 20-foot stick shift U-Haul truck from downtown Boston in rush hour traffic to Albany, New York, transporting the solar car she and her fellow MIT engineering students built to compete in the American Tour de Sol, which is a 5-day solar car race. Facing unimaginable stress as the person responsible for getting the vehicle and her teammates to the race only foreshadowed the tenacity she would need in the heat of competition, to be continued. So I love the words in there, tenacity, you know, foreshadowing the race and unimaginable stress and overcoming that. There's a lot to dig in here, Kristen. But first and foremost, welcome to the Bad Bitch Empire. We are so excited to have you as an investor in the fund.
Oh my God, I am so happy and I love that mission. It so resonates me. I mean, I grew up with three brothers. I have three boys, but I have been such a proponent of having women support one another and what I call that amplification effect, which is exactly what your mission is accomplishing.
Amazing. And what is it that really drove you to invest in the fund? I mean, you've had such a expansive career working on sustainability and pushing forward all of these initiatives. Like, what at this point in your life was like, you know, I want to invest in female-led businesses that are creating more in the world?
So, you know, it's interesting. COVID made me go inward and I did a lot of self-reflection about what my life construct wanted to look like and how I wanted it to evolve and change. So that led to my journey about taking an 8-week class, how to write a book, doing an 8-week class, how to do a TEDx talk, and starting that process of getting my public board positions, which the year after I kicked off getting my professional board resume and bio packet, I was able to get a COO role, which was I felt very much needed for my resume to get on a public board. And it was a year after that that I got my first public board. So what's interesting is that reflection also was interested in investing in startup companies. I had done a lot of work with startups and working not only understanding their business models, but how to tweak the business models to help them succeed when I worked at Ernst & Young. So I worked at Ernst & Young for over 3 years. That was my first exposure to a lot of startups, and I was starting to become asked to be advisors to their boards. This is way in the beginning. So that really intrigued me because I love asking the right questions about the business itself. And I've been able to get a little bit of a good sense of which ones will succeed and which ones might not succeed as well. And it's such a timing sweet spot. So this completely resonated with me when I got connected with you and read your book. And as I said, so many things came into alignment, the VC thing, the supporting women, startups. And, you know, as a mechanical engineer, I am kind of a tech geek and I love advanced technologies.
When you mentioned that with all of your experience that you got a sense of what makes a company successful or not, what have you found personally?
Yes. So there's a lot about timing and location. So for example, I did a lot of work with a startup company that was extremely successful in the San Francisco area. And they decided that they wanted to expand all over the US and globally, in fact. So their second launch was in a city that was very different from San Francisco. And they did not do their due diligence of looking at those, what those differences were and how they needed to adjust their model in order to succeed in that new area and new place. And it was really, really sad that over the next couple of years, they really couldn't get enough traction and they ended up, you know, kind of folding under. So the work that I had done with them and that I had done with that team gave me a lot of insight about the looking really at the economic model, the scalability, how do you scale, and how other different areas might impact your actual business so that you're very, very thoughtful. And you, things never sit still. So I always ask the question, okay, what is your near, mid, and long-term vision? And how can other incumbents easily get into that same spot or not? How do you always keep your edge? Because nothing stands still. And if you don't innovate and look at that future term, because as technology exponentializes, there's going to be new tools and things that come into play that you can't do today that you will be able to do in, let's say, 3 years or 5 years. So be ready for that. And if you're not thinking about that as you start, that's a problem. I also like to look at and ask them, how can you make money today on your business model and your foundation? Because if you're just going to be creating an electric fleet for a potential future, because right now, like Class 8 trucks are only just coming into play as electric, do you have enough money to last that long? Service them today and their needs today as you help them transition into that new future.
You have had over 3 decades of experience as an engineer. You've broken that barrier of women in STEM. And so you've had so much experience analyzing technologies, really thinking about the future of advanced technologies. What is it that you are most looking forward to when you think about how companies can really innovate using these technologies?
Oh my goodness. So we're in a really interesting time because we have societal trends that are very different today, right? There's so much. There's on personalization. We all have iPhones. There's the merging into, you know, mega cities, honestly, that urban. And, you know, my kids have a very different attitude than I did when I got my driver's license. My oldest son basically felt like, this is a quote, driving is a waste of his time. And, you know, I didn't feel that way at all. For me, it was an enabler, right? An enabler of freedom and going places. So there's different societal changes. Then when you couple that with technologies we're seeing, like in the transportation space, right? There's the whole electrification and more sustainable propulsion, whether it's a hydrogen fuel cell, and then there's new biofuels. There's also autonomous vehicles. There's the connected car. There's the smart cities. There's, you know, the whole distributed ledger blockchain technology, the common mobility e-wallets, those mega apps that can bring it all together. And I'm kind of focusing on transportation right now since I've spent over 30 years there. So when you take those societal trends and you couple it with all those technology trends, you get completely new offerings and experiences. And so now automotive manufacturers, really for the last decade, have been looking at, okay, the vehicle, really, it's kind of becoming just a commodity. And it's all those other tangential things with technology and connected car and autonomous that really could add tremendous more value and higher margins and opportunity if they're able to understand that, pivot that, attract the right skill sets. And it's also needing new processes in their company. So the question is will they succeed in that, or will new startups come in and disrupt? It's an exciting space.
Awesome. So when you think about some of these other areas, I mean, with the Bad Bitch Empire Fund, we're investing in women's healthcare, economic equality, sustainability, education equity. What are other areas that you think are really exciting for you and that you're passionate about solving?
Oh, goodness. So, well, obviously on the transportation side, I see a lot of areas where that can come into play. And when you look at those, you know, like how do you leverage data? They always say, you know, data is kind of the new oil, and data and the software behind that, you know, is really coming into play and has tremendous opportunity. So for example, we have smart cities that are going to be evolving, intelligent infrastructure, connected vehicles. And so how can all of that information help us with safer intersections, safety for people, better services for the citizens in that area, right? Like you can optimize traffic flows. You can optimize, you know, even your garbage pickups and water supplies. I mean, there's so much when you think of putting and embedding technology into cities, smart cities, intelligent infrastructure in general, and having that information, being able to understand the key data elements that are important, how to synthesize that real time and get usable output for these new business models and to improve our daily lives in general. So I look at that as a whole, a major opportunity.
Mm. You were an MIT graduate student, right? I wanted you to take us back to when you started your career.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, it's really interesting. I'm an accidental engineer. I wanted to be a business major, go to Harvard Business School, and my aunt had gone to Harvard Business School. So that was sort of my vision. And for some reason, I was so drawn to Boston. What's interesting, and I believe fate always has a role, and look at what happens, and I have no regrets at all. I did not get into Harvard and I got into MIT. So I was like, of course I'm going to go into MIT. And yet I still decided to be what they called course 15, which is management, which is really unusual because you have to take the full year of physics, full year of calc, you have to take biology and chemistry. So to get through all of that, usually you're going to just decide you're going to do engineering. So my second semester, I took a micro macroeconomics class and I did not like it at all. And that was another pivotal point in my life where I'm like, wow, wait, what am I doing? I don't even like this class. And I'm really good at the engineering and math and science. And a lot of my friends in my sorority were mechanical engineering. And so I talked with a lot of them. And the thing that was really appealing to me is that you can do so many different things. You know, there's thermal fluids, controls, design. There's so many elements to it. And I'm like, you know what? This is really perfect because I'll take these classes and I'll be able to figure out where I resonate most. So the solar car was another huge pivotal moment for me. I was in a sense almost addicted to it. I lived in the lab. My friends, my senior year, were like, Kristen, we never see you. And I quickly became the only girl on the team with a bunch of guys, and I'm sure they thought they'd never see me again, to, you know, spearheading basically the movement, getting it to be recognized as a club, getting official lab space from the Institute, and leading basically supplies, getting our sponsorship, and doing those three races. So quickly became co-captain and driver. And you know, that excerpt that you gave that was on my bio, it was stressful. I had to take finals early. So here I am exhausted from finals. And I wasn't supposed to drive the first day of the race. So I was driving that U-Haul stick shift. I had never driven in Boston before. Thankfully, I grew up on a stick shift, but I hadn't driven a truck. And that was so stressful. And I remember getting there thinking, oh, good. Okay, I'm going to rest tonight. And then the other co-captain, Pete, was going to drive that first day. And like right before check-in, he knocks and says, Kristen, you're going to have to drive tomorrow. And I was like, what? He had forgotten his driver's license back in Boston. I was like, are you kidding? My stomach was like in a knot. And I could not even sleep that night, even though I was exhausted because I was stressed thinking about the race. And we were the only team that didn't have radio communication with our car. So I, in a sense, was in my own little bubble and own world, but it was fantastic. And I'm hooked. So that's what got me into automotive. So,
And then that defined the rest of your career.
It did. It really has. And that passion that I had for really wanting to change the world, changing the way people and goods move is really, it was inside me back then, and it still has been inside me, which is why I joined Engine Division at Ford. I felt like understanding that current state propulsion system was important, and it really has paid dividends because I know engines. I was a cylinder head component engineer. I've worked at several engine plants. They sent me to Germany for 3 years. So I had a great global experience as well. I minored in French in college, and then I learned German when I was there and saw all of Europe. So it was so expansive for me. And it really has brought me to where I am today with my board positions and helping accelerate this transition to more sustainable transportation, because I know a lot. And it's like, how do you put together the right partnerships and the right companies to do it in a very thoughtful and smart way?
So it seems like you honed in on something very early on and then discovered that passion and made it your purpose. I think that something that a lot of people struggle with is trying to find that passion, that thing, that purpose that drives them, because yes. Especially today, there is so many options, so much FOMO, you know, so many directions your life could go. What suggestions or advice do you have?
Yeah, so I'd say there's two things. I always tell my kids, you know, I have three boys and my youngest just went off to college. And so I'm now an empty nester, which is kind of fun. I've always told them that it's so like that my job as a mom is not only to teach them life skill sets, but to give them experiences. And that's through these experiences that they are going to better understand what they like and what they really don't like. And it's ironic, my youngest son used to be the worst eater. And then when I implemented dinner night and they had to each pick their dinner, cook it from start to finish, even clean up the dishes, right? It was fascinating how he did a complete 180 degree turn. Turns out he loves to cook. He is now this amazing gourmet chef. So we all love it when he's around and we're like, all right, Peter gets to cook tonight. And, but he hates to do the dishes, which is okay now, you know, but so he would have never known that if that kind of experience wasn't forced upon him when he was 11 years old. And I do have to say, when he was first using that big chopping knife that I have, I was a little nervous, but he's all good. And, you know, so I love taking them on trips. I love encouraging them to try different things, different sports, activities, and they all embrace it. And it's like living that talk. The other thing that has been really important for me is that it's been over 15 years now that I have done yoga regularly. First, it started out like twice a week. Then it was three times a week. Literally every day I do my yoga. I travel with my travel yoga mat. So even if I'm away, it's just in my carry-on suitcase and I can do it anywhere, even on the cement patio if I need to. That has really helped me understand who I am and ground me and give me clear thinking. And also when opportunities come, I am like, oh my goodness, this is a great thing for me to try. So I'm always trying to attract and do new experiences as well. So even though I've been in automotive, my trajectory has been flexible and fluid, and I find it completely fun.
So really it's about just putting yourself out there and having those experiences and seeing what resonates.
Absolutely. And the, you know, the other thing is like in the industry, I did a race, 10-day race from New York to LA with five electric vehicles on the non-Tesla infrastructure. And I drove the Tesla Model Y as not part of the race. I had it professionally filmed. It was on NBC Sports. As an engineer, I'm like, well, I've never orchestrated anything like this. So it's not like I had a rule book to follow, but it happened. And it's like, I could never have predicted how unbelievable it was. So the insights I gained, I had three teams that had never driven an EV. I had, you know, my experience on the Tesla. I got to see firsthand their experiences on the non-Tesla and the charging infrastructure by stress testing the system, having like five vehicles simultaneously go pretty much the same route, 3,300 miles. That was very telling. And so in the talks that I would give afterwards, it's using that experience to give insights to really catalyze change. And it's interesting because there's so many experts in the electric vehicle space that have never done anything like that. You know, and even just this summer, I took my youngest son to Europe for his first time ever for 10 days. So I rented an electric vehicle. What's the process to rent? What choices did I have or not have? And how was it being an American using that infrastructure there? Which it wasn't easy. But anyway, it was that's what shapes us. And that's how you can help create better change by doing, putting yourself into those places for those experiences. Then you know and can catalyze, you know, a better experience.
Yeah. Well, now you are at the point where you just co-authored a book on meta mobility, which is the intersection of the metaverse and mobility, which is a whole new domain, right? Entering the world of Web3.
Yes.
Tell us about what it is and how you got into this.
Yeah. So this is fascinating. I got just over a year ago through LinkedIn, I got a knock on the door to be part of the Fast Future Executive. And their goal was to have, they had these 12 topic areas. One was the future of mobility. And he was looking for an expert in each of those areas. So he had everyone else set up and was looking for a mobility expert and came across my profile on LinkedIn. And I really love the premise. It's companies then would go onto the platform, they'd pay a fee, and then their people could listen to the talks from the experts. And basically you give four of them a year, four 1-hour talks a year. So that group collectively of the 12 of us, we got a book deal last April. And so it's the Fast Future Blur. You can pre-order it on Amazon already and it launches the end of May. And so what they did is they paired each of us up because there's so many cool intersections, right? And we kind of talked about that a little earlier, right? And with these societal trends coming on in the whole new technology realm. So one of the women in there, her name's Martha, she's actually lives in Switzerland. Her expertise is the metaverse. And when you think about that merging of how people and goods are moving differently and are going to move much more differently in the future, all of the metaverse stuff really interplays, you know, as you come together to change for, as I said, the smart cities, the intelligent infrastructure, new experiences in the car with virtual reality, augmented reality. I mean, there's so many facets to it. So that was also a great learning experience because Martha and I had to work very closely together. So we wrote our chapter and I had never heard the term. I actually think we created that term meta mobility. And so we're really excited to talk about it at the book launch in LA in June when we're there. And I love the fact that the organizers of the Fast Future Executive were so forward thinking, and because coupling two experts together, you're creating now kind of a new realm that didn't exist. And so that was just a good experience. And, you know, I wanted to be an author. And so that also aligned with my goals and objectives.
Awesome. So like many bad bitches, you have what I call a portfolio career. You're juggling being an author and a speaker and CIO and board members. How do you juggle it all?
You know, that's a good question. You know, as I like to call it dabbling, like I was very intentional that when COVID hit and I could work now from anywhere, as long as I had Wi-Fi and a laptop, I found that extremely liberating. When I had the opportunity to work at Park My Fleet, I love the fact that it started as a startup during COVID. So there was never an office. And his whole intent was to get the best talent globally. So we have our COO and CTO are living in Tel Aviv, Israel. You know, I moved from the Detroit area to a little island in Puerto Rico called Vieques. Literally, it's my 2-week anniversary of living there. And, you know, and our CEO is in New York and our CSO is in New Hampshire. So it's fantastic. And I love that mindset. So we have gotten very used to working from anywhere. And it really does enable a lot. So with my yoga and being grounded, and it helps me focus and get things done a lot more efficiently, I like to do what's dabbling. And I also have made sure that all of those things are interrelated. So my two board positions amplify what I'm doing at Park My Fleet. The book and my expertise now of being a mobility expert is helping not only my board positions, but also my work. So all of these things are just kind of coming together and amplifying, even though I'm doing what I call dabbling. You know, I'm not like in an office 14 hours a day, you know, focused on one thing. And I really like it. After over 30 years, you know, in the industry, it really does come into play. I'm really at a place in my life that I love that intersection and being able to do so many different things that interconnect.
Yeah, that interconnectedness, when I think about how I've done it for my career as well, is so key. Everything builds on itself and builds on each other so that it feels like it's cohesive, amplifying, right?
And yet it feels like you're doing different things, which makes it, I think, more enjoyable as well. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you are part of a small group of women who are sitting on public boards, right? We still haven't gotten to gender equity there. Yes. What was the process for you of deciding you wanted to be on a public board, manifesting, finding those opportunities, and now sitting on two?
Yes. So when I started to take that step back during COVID, I actually hired for 12 weeks an executive coach that started walking me through exercises and discussions and processes to help me hone what I wanted to do. And that's kind of how the board came into evolution, because I loved being, you know, with being in consulting at EY, I really love that strategic look. I loved like advancing technology. I loved so many aspects that I think are important for a board, not only to have a foundational knowledge, but also a future thinking knowledge. Because what good is a company if you're going to be like a Kodak or a Polaroid, right? You have to do that. You cannot make mistakes of past big companies not really looking into that future. So what I did is there was a couple people that I knew at Ford that were on boards. One of them was a woman, and she was the COO of Europe. And I had a couple of conversations with her that were extremely enlightening. So she was the one who basically told me that I needed to be a CEO, a COO, or a CFO. And that was like, you know what? She's right. And so that's why I didn't really want to be a CEO, actually. And I said, you know, I want to find that COO role. And she connected me to some of her companies that do, like Spencer Stewart. And I knew people at Egan Zehnder and, you know, who do actual board searches. So I had discussions and dialogues with them. It's another reason why I kicked off my board resume package. I had it professionally done. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to invest in myself. And I want them to help me. I'll learn from it, but I want them to help hone it. And I know it's going to pay itself over, right? And it did, obviously. So that intentionality, I think, really set things in motion. The other thing that was pivotal is, you know, my mentor who had, you know, given me those contacts and connections, she was on Velodyne Lidar's board for 4 years and didn't want to be renewed when they were going to go up for vote. And so she connected me to the chairman. And when we had a conversation, it was very synergistic. You know, he loved me. They hired me on as an advisor to the board for 3 months. And then when there was the open board seat, I kind of was voted in. And so that's sort of, I call it the intentionality and taking the action that led to that first board seat.
So you became a COO?
Yeah. So when it was ironic, the week I kicked off the professional board resume bio package, the week I got connected through Mogul, which I had only just joined a few months before, you know, all women trying to help with C-suite and boards. And they had a COO role for TrueCar. And I was like, whoa, I hadn't even started like the 30-page document to fill out all my stuff for the board package and resume, you know, like, because you have to do a lot of work for that. I was like dumbfounded that like, it was almost as if like by me putting it into motion, it just attracted those opportunities. And so that was in July that I did the interview and kicked off that board package and resume. And I started at TrueCar that September. So
Amazing. So yeah, I mean, one of the things that we connected on, in addition to investing in the advanced technology and supporting women and women-led businesses, was this idea of manifestation and intentionality and taking action. So more of the traits behind the results, not the results themselves, right? And I think that we talk a lot here at the Bad Bitch Empire about energy, the types of energy that you put out into the universe, and then the universe kind of showing you the opportunities based off of the energy you put out there. So what is your relationship to that? And how do you really think about your own role in, let's say, the greater universe?
You know, that's a really good point. I've had so many people tell me that I inspire them, and that, you know, I see so many people as well that over 30 years at work, they're in a sense, I hate to say it, but like half dead. They don't have that joie de vivre, right? They're not excited and happy about life. And so for me, working and finding that inner joy and that happiness, I think it really is an important part of attracting these great opportunities. And I'll just tell you about like my intent of moving to Puerto Rico, that I found like this opportunity for 9 acres of land. And I'm like, oh, I need to do this, right? So sometimes it's knowing yourself and who you are and knowing when you need to take action on something. Now, I didn't know exactly what's going to happen with this 9 acres when I bought it, but my intent was, okay, I'd like to build a sustainable, grid-independent water collection purification house that can withstand hurricanes and have fruits and plants and vegetables and help show people how it could be done. So what's interesting is just the fact that when I purchased it that last April, I was in a conference in May and I got connected to someone here in Puerto Rico because they're like, oh, do you know Ignacio? And can you, oh, you have to know him. And then it's this trickle down effect of, you know, knowing one person who connects you to another person. And now I am becoming very much involved in this, what I call energy ecosystem in Puerto Rico, because they're really trying to change it for grid independence, green, you know, sustainability, but also resiliency. And it's like one thing leads to another. And it's like, wow, this is really exciting. And it goes and it plays hand in hand with my work. Because for fleets, if you have 500 Class 8 trucks, are you going to rely on the grid? You might need 50 megawatts of energy. So let's think about it differently. And so getting into all of this stuff about microgrids and green energy, of course, as you look at decarbonization, it all goes hand in hand. And so it's like, I had no idea it could lead to that, but that's kind of what's happening. And it's exciting and fun. So.
Yeah. And the other thing that I really like about our conversations and just you as a human is that you have this abundance mindset. And I say every bad bitch who comes in here is there's the three A's, which is ambition, action, and abundance, right? So it's like, yeah. I remember we had this call once and you were like, oh, you know, there's something happened with a bunch of money that was, you know, taken from you.
Oh, right. And my contract. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was like a lot of money. Yeah. Right. And then you're like, oh, you know, like it'll come back. Like you just knew that you were
right.
You
it's going to come back to me. This is my thought 100-fold. Right. Thank you, God. Right. So it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have, yeah. I mean, right. Things are going to, you know, you're going to have things, you know, loopholes and stuff and curveballs thrown your way. And you're right. It's how you handle that. And sure, you can be pissed. We're all human, right? You can be pissed. And, you know, what was frustrating is talking to lawyers and stuff. It's like, well, it could cost between this to this. And I'm like, none of them would do it on contingency. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, this is really a screwed up system that, you know, here you've gotten all this money taken and then it's going to cost another fortune and all this litigation work and the lawyers are going to win. So it's like, oh man, you know? Yeah. So I think you have to just change your headset. You know, you can get pissed and then change your headset. And it's like, for me, it's like, yeah, I want to move forward and upward, right? Upward trajectory. I'm not going to go in this downward spiral, get negative Nelly, which can be very easy to do. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about the intention that you have with your investments, like with the Bad Bitch Empire Fund. Mm-hmm. What is this intention that when you came in and you're like, okay, this is what I want the money to do, and this is where I see that creating this world that I want to see?
Yes. So I think that we as women have such a gift to give that we have a different way of working. And I'm, as I said, I have the three brothers and my three sons, and I've worked with a male dominated industry. I have found it so powerful when you have men and women honoring and respecting each other and working together, because, you know, together it's, you know, let's say it's the 1 + 1 = 4. So I want to caveat that I'm all about that. The thing that about supporting female led businesses really resonates with me. I've been mentoring women basically my entire career. And I've seen so many cases where they're lost and struggling and just need a little bit of guidance and support and someone to spend time and help. And so I look at this, like when I was listening to your, I call it stats and facts about, you know, how much, what percent of VC money gets routed to women. I was flabbergasted because I didn't realize it was so pitiful. And it's like, wait, this has got to change. We have way too much to give. And when we band together, we make great, amazing things happen. So I look at that. The thing that I want to bring into this, I think it's great that we have the healthcare and we have all these different elements. And I love and resonate with, as I said, you know, there's all these new technologies and stuff coming into play and the data and the software. And as we look at that future and where we're headed, it's like I see and know of tremendous opportunity in that space. So I want to be a part of attracting and helping guide and shape that. And you're right about abundance. It's like, yeah, we can do, like if our women-led businesses, you know, make a buttload of money, look at all the good that we do in the world. Like that's kind of what drives me. It's like, oh my God, I could do this and this and this and help with this if, you know, like, and so I have all these great ideas about it's amplifying that abundance. When you have that money, it enables a lot. And that's, I think, as women, kind of in our DNA and nature to do that. So it resonates with me. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Well, we're so excited to have you as part of
that. I am so glad to be here. So glad. Yes.
Last question for you. What does it mean to you to be a bad bitch?
I love it. I love it. Damn. And you know, I look at it as that I am so grounded and in tune with who I am and that anything can kind of happen. And it's like a bounce off effect, like that men can try to warn you off on things saying, oh, that's too dangerous. That's this. And it's like, you know what? I don't give a shit. And I'm going to do it anyway and succeed. And I do. I don't even have to say I told you so kind of thing. You just know it and they see it and they're like, shit, she is a badass. And I love that. So
just bad bitch energy in your bones.
In your bones. I mean, it wasn't always there. It's taken some time to get there, but I love it. I love it.
I love it too. Well, thank you so much, Kristen. It was great chatting with you.
Lisa Carmen, thank you. And I love what you're doing and we're going to make great things happen as a team. Mm-hmm. Yep.